Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Plenty to come between now and then. We're going to cross over to Gary Murphy at Royal County Down in just a few minutes' time. James DeGale on his world title win in Boston on Saturday night. We've Monica Dukarska on the European Rowing Championships in Poznan this weekend. Niall Gilligan on Clare Hurling. And we check in on the latest developments in Spain with Begoña Perez and Mark Langdon. All that in less than an hour. I hope we can actually manage it in less than an hour. That's the producer's job. John and JJ, you better keep an eye on me. We'll give it a shot though. Text us in as always, 51552. You can tweet at GameOn2FM. Anything you want to say between now and 8 o'clock, we'll do our best to get to it. I'm also delighted to welcome Irish Olympian, current Irish heavyweight champion Darren O'Neill to studio. Hey, Darren.
Hi, Hugh.
How's the form?
Good, yeah. Good to be back.
Yeah, you filled out a little bit since the last time we met.
I don't know if that's good or a bad thing.
That is a good thing. It's a good thing if you're fighting at heavyweight.
Yeah, hopefully.
How's the training been going and everything? Yeah. We'll get into it later on, but you're feeling good.
Yeah, last few weeks have been going well for the camp. I suppose we've one or two boys heading out. We've Davey Oliver just his way at the minute. And Joe Ward will be heading away next week, but I suppose our European Games team is heading away next week as well, so it's exciting times ahead, and things have been going pretty well in the last few weeks.
Yourself and Adam, probably the two more experienced lads in it, and there's a lot of younger guys coming through as well, so it must be exciting for them.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, Paddy Barnes and Michael Conlon have both qualified for Rio Games already, so there's two spaces there. David Oliver Joyce and Joe Ward, obviously, in the professional section of it. I suppose leaving two more places. And, you know, the young boys are getting a chance now, and no better stage than the European Games, the inaugural Games, you know.
Yeah, what's Azerbaijan like to go to? I've never been. I've been to the delights of Kazakhstan, Belarus, others, but this place seems a bit...
Yeah, listen, there's about an 800 metre or 1,000 metre square in the middle. It's beautiful outside that. It's pretty run
just
down.
Don't go. Honest.
Oh, Christ. Really? We were there... 2011 we were there for the World Championships, and it was getting cramps now and stuff, you know. Spent more time in the toilet than I did in the boxing ring, to be honest with you. But
that wouldn't do your heavyweight prospects any good.
No, it helped when I was making 75, but not now these days.
Paddy Barnes should move there. Listen, we'll talk about the lads later on. We also have James DeGale, a brilliant win for him on Saturday night, and you'd know James pretty well.
Yeah, actually the first time we would have met James was in a junior competition in Brandenburg Cup in Germany. We were different weights then. I was boxing against a different English guy, but I suppose he was quite special then, and I suppose we kind of were lucky enough to avoid each other. I suppose, I don't know who was luckier, but
he was lucky.
He'd say that and I'd say the same, so you know. Look, fair play to him, fantastic results. He's I suppose after pulling out great results through the year, you know, Olympic gold obviously in Beijing, and now world champion. Is fantastic for him.
I remember when Groves beat him, and you just thought, you know what, it might not happen for this lad. He always had that confidence about him, and there was a lot thought of him by, you know, I suppose the English press, by everyone, but there was a lot made of James DeGale. But when Groves beat him, I thought that could be it for him.
Yeah, it was hard to know. I suppose those two have been, I suppose, loggerheads for years in the amateur game. As far as I know, they may have been the same club at one stage.
Yeah, I think there's a serious rivalry there anyway.
Yeah, there really is. And I suppose I would have been more on the Gal side, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I never got a liking for Groves in the amateur game. I just thought he was a little bit brash and in your face.
Yeah, and I think actually when he went up against Frotch, and then Frotch took it to another level of egotism and getting in your face, then people sided with Groves. But people, maybe they lost sight of what he was like before that. And when you compare anyone with Carl Frotch, come up pretty well.
Well, that's exactly it. But I suppose when you look at the second fight, then Frotch tried to keep it together and he didn't get dragged into it too much. And I can understand the first time round, I suppose Groves was the up and coming guy, and you know, going in against the world champion, the world number one. So why would he, I suppose, let an up and coming guy disrespect him? But second time he kept his head, and I suppose he showed it on the night what he was made of, you know.
Yeah, well, listen, I can't wait to speak to James a little bit later on. Hopefully he answers the phone. He is just back off the plane, so hopefully pick up the phone. But anyway, sure, look, we've loads to talk about with the lads as well. Gary Murphy is on the line from Royal County Down, lapping up the golf course. Hey, Gar.
Hugh, how are you doing? You well?
I'm pretty good. What's the weather like up there? I hear the forecast isn't great for the weekend.
Yeah, but it's not. It's supposed to get a little colder at the weekend, but you know, as always with the Irish weather, you really don't know. But it's beautiful at the moment, and it's changed course a lot. It's really hard and fast at the moment. They're actually trying to slow the greens down a bit. So, you know, it depends on the weather, but I think it's going to be make for an amazing championship. It's almost got an open championship feel to it, even though it is the Irish Open, or the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, I should say. Huge crowds expected. Best player on the planet by a stretch is the host for the week. You know, so it makes for a wonderful championship, I think, and just hopefully we can have some Irish in contention come the weekend.
There's a long-held view, Gary, that, you know, the Irish Open should always be on links courses. Do you agree?
I do agree to a certain extent, but then we're very fortunate. We've some, you know, wonderful parkland courses. You've got the K Club, you've got Mount Juliet, Adair Manor, mm-hmm. who have given a lot to this championship as well. So it's kind of nice that it goes around. I think as a traditionalist, you kind of like to have it on links courses the whole time, but there is a commercial reality as well. And courses like that have given a lot back to the game and to the European Tour. So you'll probably see them, you know, we could possibly go for a rota system, but certainly, you know, it's in its purest form on links, and it's great to have it. You know, Royal County Down is such a famous course. It's been over 70 years since it had an Irish Open, so it's nice to see them get their chance. They've given a lot to the game as well with Walker Cup. We've got six of those Walker Cup players from the 07 in attendance this week, and none more so than Rory McIlroy.
So what kind of a course is it, Gary? I don't know how much you've seen today in terms of how it's set up, but is it a difficult golf course? Do you expect low scores?
With any links course, Hugh, it's always going to be dependent on the weather. Mm. If it's calm and benign and playing a little bit soft, modern professionals will destroy any links golf course. But they've got it really fast and quick, which means that it's not going to be target golf this week. They're going to have to prep really hard in practice, find out where they need to get the ball to land to find out where it's going to go. It's not a case of it's an 8-iron, 160, hit it at the flag and it'll stay there. There was a couple of greens, got a little quick in practice, so they've been mindful of that. But it's just going to, you know, it's going to be a great test in the fact that every part of your game is going to be required. And a big thing here as well, there's quite a few blind shots. There's six or seven blind shots. And the big thing with that, if it does get windy, you know, you're going to have to get the ball in the air, which normally when it's windy, you can try and knuckle it down and keep it low and control it. But it's quite unique here, Royal County Down, that there's quite a few blind shots. So the ball will be in the air, and it's how the guys can judge the change in temperature, because the change in temperature is going to be a big thing for a lot of the guys. They're used to playing kind of 25, 30 degrees. It's going to be around the 15 degree mark this week at sea level. So ball is not going to travel as far. So you'd have to suggest, you know, the kind of Irish or British players do have a big advantage this week.
You mentioned the hard work and preparation in the practice rounds that the players are going to have to get used to the course. And I'm thinking about the host, Rory McIlroy, because obviously as host, he has a certain amount of duties to fulfil. There is a huge amount of hype because it's his Irish Open, if you like. And his record has been very poor in the last while. So maybe, you know, Rory McIlroy needs to close ranks a little bit, just concentrate on getting the job done, making the cut and focus on his golf this weekend. But that might be difficult.
It possibly will be. He's a huge role to play. I think you have to understand the fact that he's got so many guys coming to play this week. He's going to kind of do swapsies with the guys, and he'll go and play in their events. So not only has he put a ferocious amount of effort into the build-up, get the guys here, but he's going to be doing work for the Irish Open after this has ended, and, you know, playing in other events. So he's given a huge commitment to this tournament. I think the fact that he missed the cut last weekend, which was disappointing for, you know, BMW, who are wonderful sponsors of the flagship event at Wentworth, but it was great for us in the Irish Open because he needed that rest. You know, he had a big stretch the last few weeks with winning a couple of times, especially the match play and, you know, big finish of the Players and the excitement of winning at Wells Fargo and then straight over to Wentworth. A lot of commitment. So probably for, you know, from a selfish point of view, it's good for the Irish Open, that the fact that he had that little break last week.
But I wonder, just on that, will we see him at Wentworth again, Gary? Because, you know, the likes of Ian Poulter is pretty public about the fact that he doesn't like the course. There are a few players who don't like that golf course, Rory being one of them. I know he won it last year, but I just wonder, you know, because he has so many opportunities and so many options out there, will we see him play the PMW next season or any season after that?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think he's very cognizant of the fact that he has a role to play as world number one. He's a European. He's our, you know, standout player. It's the flagship event. I think the guys you know, should play that event. I mean, it's impossible because they're technically self-employed, so you can't demand as such when they do and don't play. They have brought in a rule that the top guys have to play, you know, the National Opens. I think it's very important they play. It's disappointing that, you know, Poulter didn't play, but then he's playing at Warburton the end of the year, the Sky Sports sponsored event, and he's lending all his weight and time to that. So there's a little bit of give and take, but certainly for your flagship event, I think all the guys should turn up. Now, the fact that the course is one that they don't like, I don't really buy into that. You know, it should be a case where, okay, this is a course I'm not really that happy on, but you have to adapt your game to those scenarios. You'll have a situation this week, Hugh, they can practice for 2 days, have two completely different winds to practice in, and then Thursday can be a different day, and that's professional golf. It's adapting. So it's a bit of a cop-out to say I don't like the course and I don't play well around there. Well, find out why you don't and play better.
Okay, well, look, we're going to do our big preview tomorrow night, Gary. We just wanted to get a sense of the build-up today. So we'll get your tips and all that kind of stuff tomorrow. Are you playing the Pro-Am, by the way?
No, I wouldn't get in as an amateur, never mind a pro. The way my game's at the moment. By the way, Hugh, I sorted out those 41 tickets you were looking for.
Did you? I tell you what, you're a star. Thanks a million, I appreciate that. And what about the corporate hospitality to go with it? Otherwise, well, I'm not going.
That's obviously included. So the Village of Greystones are all invited. Is that the way it is?
That's it. Listen, enjoy tonight, Gary. Cups of tea and be in bed by 9 o'clock. And we'll talk to you fresh as a daisy by tomorrow night.
No problem. Thanks a million, guys.
Cheers, Gar. Thanks a million. Gary Murphy there. Okay, we're going to move straight on if we can, because Niall Gilligan is on the line after Clare's defeat to Limerick on Sunday. Hiya, Niall.
How are you doing, you?
Listen, I won't keep you too long. I suppose we wanted to check in and get, first of all, your thoughts on the performance and the result on Sunday. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I suppose from a Clare point of view, I suppose we probably knew going into the match that it was going to be very tight, and, you know, my own opinion going in that, you know, with the players that we were down with, say, with Conor McGrath first of all through injury, and Brendan Bugler through suspension, and then the other two was only four steps and tees in Podge Collins and Colin Galvin, that, you know, that the field was going to be level, so to speak, you know, like I'd still think Clare would have had a much stronger team if they had everyone at their disposal, but, you know, we knew the game was going to be tight, and it so transpired. So, like, the first half was very disappointing, you know, that both teams kind of, it was like shadow boxing, really, played a kind of a defensive role, but then the game opened up in the second half, and we had a fantastic second half, and I suppose, you know, Limerick, as we know, came out 1 point winners.
John Fogarty's column in the Irish Examiner today references the fact that Clare are still pretty frustrated by the referee's performance, not with the amount of frees given against them, but the lack of frees awarded to them. Would you go along with that?
Look, I suppose, you know, I was just looking at the stats there, you know, Clare conceded 16 frees and by the referee's count, Limerick conceded 8, so, and then on that, Shane Dowling scored 10 frees, whereas Colin Ryan scored 5, and, you know, Clare, I suppose, you know, there's a huge talk around the country over the last 2 or 3 days about Clare's discipline, and, you know, that, you know, is what I think is four sending offs now in the last 3 games. So it is a problem. You know, whether it's bad refereeing or Clare in discipline, I think it's both. And I suppose, you know, you know, I think it was James E. O'Connor made reference to the fact that maybe in training that, you know, that, you know, when Davies refereeing the matches, that he wants to have them real aggressive and real aggressive games, you know, to get a real high tempo, and, you know, maybe that the freeze hadn't been blown and the lads are carrying this through to the match. So,
yeah.
But it can continue like this, because if you're conceding 10 points from place balls, you know, it's virtually impossible to win.
Well, that would make an awful lot of sense if the guys had that attitude in training, in terms of just the aggression levels, and that they weren't being pulled on that naturally, you know, it's very difficult then to stop yourself all of a sudden when it comes to a championship match.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose, look, maybe add to that as well, you know, there's you know, Davy Fitz and the management have been very critical over the referees over the last year or two, and you know, there was one instance yesterday, for example, on Sunday, for example, where I think it was Goodgie O'Connell, Jericho, pulled the togs of James Ryan, and, you know, Davy and the management were remonstrating on the line, and, you know, the commentator said at the time, you know, that it definitely was a free, and you could see it. And I suppose referees in a case like that, then they kind of get frustrated, and maybe they're getting turned turned against the Clare management. So, you know, I often refer to Brian Cody, you know, match like that, especially when Kilkenny are still in the championship, he makes no reference to the referee, whether he's, like, if we take last year's All-Ireland final, we know in the drawing game he was very unhappy with the performance of Barry Kelly. He didn't open his mouth until the replay was finished.
Yeah, well, maybe it's a case of kind of keeping the mouth shut, if you're saying, trying to get the referees back on side. We had John Milan on with us last night, and it's his opinion, basically, that Clare need to get Podge Collins back into the squad. It sounds easy, but obviously it's a different story in the reality. Can they get him to come back, do you think?
Look, I suppose, I don't know the simple answer. I think personally it's kind of gone too late now, and that, you know, but no doubt about it, Podge Collins is a huge loss to Clare, you know, as is Colm Galvin, gone to the States. And, you know, no team, and even, I suppose, we put Kilkenny's or that in this bracket, you know, you need your best players on the field. But I think, you know, we are where we are now from a Clare point of view, and they just have to go on. But whether the issue Ger Lucknane made reference to it in a newspaper article last week, whether the issue is solely just football concerned, or whether there's another underlying background issue between Podge and the management. But no doubt about it, he would have been a huge loss there, you know, the way he'd come on to ball around the middle of the field there last Sunday.
And the margins are so small at championship level. 1 point, you know, against Limerick when they were down to 14 men for they got to 25 minutes on their own. I mean, if there's a general acceptance in Clare, you know, and just take, you know, whatever slant you want, the media, the fans, even players in the squad, that, you know, Podge Collins coming back is to the betterment of Clare hurling. It seems strange to me that whatever the differences are, or whatever the reasons are, that there can't be someone putting out their hand and saying, come on, like, we want you back, we need you back, and just make it happen for the good of Clare hurling.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, I suppose, you know, but he hasn't been hurling now, I suppose, since January, or he's very little hurling done. But, you know, definitely, and a lot of Clare supporters and Clare fans would feel that way. There's you know, they want their best players on the field, and I suppose it showed on Sunday. Like, there is a huge amount of talent in Clare. They've won four of the last six under 21 All Irelands, you know, and which has been well documented. But, you know, the player of Podge Collins' caliber, who would have been hurler of the year in 2013, remember, except for the replay at All Ireland, where he didn't have such a great game. But, you know, a lot of Clare supporters are hoping that whatever differences are, that, you know, that they can sit down and put him to one side and get Podge back in the field.
If you're a betting man, yes or no?
No.
Okay, we'll leave it on that, Niall. Listen, I know you have to run. Thanks so many for making the time to talk to us.
No problem, you.
Niall Gillingham there. We'll check in with Niall, I suppose, as the championship progresses. Were you surprised, as a hurling man yourself, were you surprised that Clare were beaten?
No, I don't think it was. I mean, you know, if you look at recent form, I know you can say Clare are older in the championship 2013, but you look at Limerick against Kilkenny last year, they put us to I suppose, the go for colours. You know, and I think Limerick were, I suppose, overall probably a little bit more disciplined and a little bit more consistent in their play over the last two or three seasons. I suppose there was times in the match where, I suppose, Clare, especially at the start of the second half, I suppose Limerick got a lead, but then Clare seemed to come back into it, and you thought, you know, this could be their day. But
they had that momentum for a long
time.
There was
a few swings of momentum throughout the game. I think Clare, obviously, I think they went in with a 2 point lead.
Yeah.
But having lost the man, then I suppose that quickly, you know, I suppose a 4 point turnaround there, and it looked like Limerick going to run away with it. But, you know, I suppose obviously they got a man sent off then and levelled things up, and Clare came back in. So it's a little bit, I suppose, and there was controversy obviously at the end with the substitute and the timing, but it was a little bit, I don't know, it was a hard one to call. I suppose a few different experts, if you want to call it, had a different way. I think Shefflin had predicted Clare
were going to win, yeah.
John
on Friday night, Milan predicted that Limerick would go and win it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting one. For Clare hurling, you'd have to say somebody has to step in and get Podge Collins back.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as you say, they do need all their strong players. And they've been very successful underage, as has been said, but, you know, it's about producing that on the senior stage then. And I just fear a little bit that they may, having all the underage success, that they may go a little bit like how Galway went for a few years, that they were chopping and changing all the time. You need to have a bit of consistency there, you know, especially in the backbone of the team. And, you know, you can put one or two in and pull them in and out then on the fringes, as has been seen with Kilkenny through the years. You know, there's always been a strong backbone to the team and a bit of consistency in the, I suppose, the players and the lineup. But until they get that, you know, I can't see them being consistent contenders, you know.
Okay, stay with us. Darren's going to stay with us. We have Monica Dukowska coming in after the break.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Hey guys, comes as a text, 51552 by the way. Can you pay on the gate to get into the Irish Open Friday or Saturday? My initial answer to that is absolutely not. I think the tickets are completely sold out. We will double check that though before the end of the show and get back to you. But I mean, as far as everything I've heard suggests that it's an all ticket event and it's been sold out for a long, long time. Now, this weekend, Team Ireland will compete in the European Rowing Championships in Poznan in Poland, with the heats taking place on Friday morning, followed by the semi-finals and final over the course of the weekend. One member of the high-performance team is Monica Dukowska, and she joins us in studio. Hey, Monica.
Hi, how are you? Thank you very much for the invitation.
It's great to have you in. Now, you're heading back to your home country for Ireland to compete in the European Championships. That must be pretty exciting.
That's right, yeah. I'm pretty excited. The work has been going pretty well as well. So we are all excited to just race and hopefully perform very well.
Are you nervous because it's in Poland? Does it make it extra special for you, or is it just another event for you?
Well, I'm trying to focus on just the process and try to deliver the best performance. But I suppose there is extra bit of an excitement with having my family there and friends.
Yeah.
And my parents are traveling from Ireland as well to see me. So.
Of course, yeah. You came to Ireland. I mean, you lived in Poland until you were 16.
Yeah,
is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Was it difficult coming in? Because I understand you didn't have a lot of English when you arrived to Ireland. Is that right?
No, pretty much none.
Really? None? Yeah. That must have been really tough. As a 16-year-old, yeah. You know, teenager, settling into school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so like, I mean, tell me, how difficult was it?
Well, it was pretty hard. Just imagine people coming up to you and chatting to you and you just can't answer them. It was frustrating. So I just remember coming back from school and just lying on bed and crying, saying, I will never go there again.
So, really? And, yeah. So the language, I mean, did you just have to dive straight in and try and pick up as much as you can?
Yeah,
you
know, pretty much, yeah.
On the job, kind of, yeah. So to speak.
Yeah. Really. I was just forced to learn and study. So what I was doing, I was translating everything from English to Polish and then back from Polish to English. And it was tedious work, but yeah. It paid off.
And did it take you long to kind of settle in?
A bit, yeah, a few months. And then it took me nearly, I would say, over a year to actually kind of start thinking English and answer people more, I suppose, fluently. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
I say English is one of the harder ones to learn.
Yeah, it is. Sure, Darren still struggles with England. He's born English. He's born in Kilkenny.
It's Kilkenny English, it's different English.
So, okay, the rowing side of things, how did that come about?
I was actually introduced in rowing in secondary school. So I was just asked, would you like to join the local rowing club, Killorgan Rowing Club? You are so tall. And to be honest, I didn't even know what the word rowing meant.
Because I was going to say, you know, life is difficult enough. You've moved from Poznan to Ireland as a 16-year-old. You don't speak the language. You're trying to integrate yourself in the system. And then you take up one of the most horrible sports from my mind that there is, just to punish yourself even more.
Yeah, sure, I just went for it. I love challenges.
Yeah, you certainly do, yeah. I mean, it's a difficult sport.
Yeah, I did, but I fell in love with it. It's just amazing.
Why?
I think it's just you know, river, water, competitions as well, and you're constantly testing yourself, so you have to push yourself to the limit. Although you're in a crew, you still have to give 100%. And I suppose the aspect of representing a country is another kind of important thing that just gets you going and motivates you.
But before you get to that stage, I suppose, you have to like what you're doing. And there must be a side of you that just enjoys pushing yourself to the absolute limit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Even when you see your body changing and getting stronger and pushing better scores on the ergometers or lifting heavier weights. And, you know, getting up the rankings, like, that gets you going, definitely.
Because there's a guy I used to play rugby with who left rugby to go and do a lot of rowing. And he's still doing it to this day. He's done, you know, Atlantic Challenges and all that kind of stuff. And he just says that the physical pain is one thing, but the mental barrier, the mental pain that you go through, you nearly want yourself to quit before your body gives up.
Yeah, definitely. But it builds your character.
Yeah.
And you can constantly go for more. And the day you think you reach your potential, forget it. You will probably get more out of yourself again the next day.
Really? Okay. So then, okay. So how did the Irish setup come about? You obviously were very good in Killorgan and you got spotted somewhere.
Well, the way it started, I was trying to row for Poland at the beginning.
Okay.
So I went to trial for Poland in 2009, and I got into the squad, but then there was something missing. My family was in Ireland. I wasn't really, I suppose, part of the team in a way because I was missing home. So then I decided that, no, I started rowing in Ireland, so I have to commit to Ireland because that's where I started, and I nearly felt like it was something to give back to the country for, let's say, accepting me and helping me out and all of that. So then I went to home internationals, and after that I was trying to get Irish passport, so I had to wait 5 years to get that.
Really? 5 years?
Yeah, so I got it in October 2012.
3 years now, if you live in Ireland you can play rugby for Ireland, and yeah, it took you 5 years to get
a
passport.
Yeah, you have to wait 5 years to get a passport, yeah.
Wow.
Because I had no Irish relations, so.
All right, okay.
And after that I got into the squad in 2013, and that was my first international season.
So why is it an advantage to be tall? Just if you break it down for, say, people who have never sat in a rowing boat, why is it an advantage to be tall for a rowing?
It depends. So in order to row, you have to take a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So the longer are your legs or arms, the longer is the stroke, meaning that you travel farther than a shorter person.
And you have a partner this weekend in the boat.
Yeah.
And there must be a lot of synchronizing between the two of you. So are you both of similar build, similar height?
We are not actually, but we are working together pretty well. Yeah, so we are rowing a pair, which is two people in the boat with one oar each.
Okay.
And then Team Ireland has another seven teams, so they have women's double. So that would be two girls with two oars, two single sculls, one lightweight and one heavyweight. So there's a division in weight as well in rowing. So let's say heavyweight would be anything above 59 kilos.
Okay.
And they have men's lightweight four. The weight limit there is 70.5 kilos.
Well, you wouldn't get in the boat anyway, Darren.
No, I'm not getting into either of them.
And then men's lightweight doubles.
You get your left leg in. That's about it.
Would
you? So what about this weekend? What's the goal? Have you got a personal target? Have you got something in the back of your head that ideally you'd like to finish with?
To be honest, I want to deliver, I suppose, as a race that we have practiced so far. I would be hoping for a top six finish if possible, but it all depends on the day. We are a new combination, and I don't really know the category because I have moved from women's double to women's pair.
Okay.
So it would be interesting. It would be a test for me as well as us as a crew. So,
what are the Polish like? What are their team like? Are they strong? Have they got team?
They would be, yeah. They medaled in the women's double, and they medaled in the men's eight as well. So they have quite strong field of athletes, yeah.
In terms of your day-to-day routines at the moment, I mean, obviously you've been training hard for this. So are you full-time training? Are you?
I am, yeah.
That's a huge commitment. And what's your, give me an example of your day.
So I get up at around 20 past six, get ready for training. So we arrive at the center at 7:30. We are on the water for 8. We do anything from 16 to 20 kilometers in the water, which would take, let's say, around an hour and a half. Then we have a break. Then we start again on the water at 11:30.
Wow.
Then we do, again, either 16 kilometers or maybe a shorter technical session. And then we could have another session on the water at around 2 o'clock.
So three sessions.
Yeah. And then three times a week we are doing weights as well.
Shiny Mike.
It's more than you drive, you.
It is more than I drive, yeah. I mean, that's serious commitment. I mean, you obviously love what you're doing.
I do, yeah. And it's an endurance-based sport as well, so you have to spend years at it to create an aerobic base, which enables you to get down the track pretty quickly.
How do you qualify for Rio? I know that's an ultimate goal of yours.
Yeah,
and
it is, yeah.
Yeah, so what needs to happen? It's obviously just over a year away now.
So the qualification is incorporated within World Championships, which are at the end of August, beginning of September.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to. So in my category, I have to finish top 11. At that event to qualify directly. And if that won't happen, there's a last qualification regatta at the end of May 2016,
okay.
And there's only four or two places available depending on a rowing category.
Are you sponsored, do you mind me asking? Or, I mean,
working at it.
Really, yeah, okay.
Yeah, working on it.
Okay, so this is a chance to shed it. So what should people do if they want to help you out? Is there, you have a website?
I do, yeah. So they can just get in touch through the website, yeah.
MonicaDukowska.ie?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And that's one link. And you're also on Twitter as well. So
I am, yeah.
We'll tweet that out with the programme. It's been brilliant to have you in. Best of luck with everything. It should be a great weekend. I mean, I imagine the atmosphere of these things is brilliant.
Oh, it is, yeah. Definitely. There's so many people as well. And then you have, you know, the dynamic of different countries and competition, yeah. So
yeah, and
it's
the
a non-contact sport as well. So it's just you.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think, you know, I'm even imagining, you know, training in rowing in Ireland as well through the winter and stuff must be extremely difficult.
Can you imagine the weather?
I can't, to be honest with you. I think you're absolutely nuts. But yeah, getting into the water in the middle of winter in Ireland, yeah. Even in the summer, as you say.
Exactly, that's the thing.
Listen, thanks many for coming into us. Thank you very best much. Luck this weekend. Maybe, you know, you might come in the next couple of weeks and let us know how you get on.
Yeah, brilliant.
Super. Okay.
Thanks, million.
Super. Monica Dukowska there. 51552 is our text number. We're going to take a quick break. We're back after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
And 51552 for your text. So, news just in. Gaelic Games and Hurling. Brian Murphy has rejoined the Cork Senior Hurling panel ahead of their match against Waterford on June the 7th. Of course, he retired last year, but I think just persuaded to come back more than anything else by Jimmy and Barry Murphy after those injuries to Christopher Joyce and Lorcan McLaughlin. So great to see him back, and obviously feels he has something left to offer. Massive game for them against Waterford, given the league form. Anyway, we'll come back to that maybe a little bit later on. Mark Langdon, football editor, I should say, with the Racing Post, is on the line, as he is every Tuesday. Hi, Mark.
Hi, are you okay?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. Now, the European season's, I suppose, coming to a close at this stage. A couple of things still to be resolved. But can I ask you first what you make of Roberto Di Matteo stepping down at Schalke after what is only, a few months in charge?
Yeah, I think it was... But although he stepped down, if he wouldn't have, then he would have been sacked, because the Schalke fans have been furious with the last few months. It just hasn't worked out for him. He hasn't been speaking to the players. The football's been very dull. The results haven't been that good, apart from the memorable victory against Real Madrid in the second leg of the Champions League game. And when they lost to Hamburg at the weekend, the fans really turned on the team, and we've seen Kevin Prince-Boateng sacked from the club, and others being suspended. Sidney Sam's another one who was sacked as well. So there were a lot of problems there at Schalke. They're a huge club, and for them to finish sixth and below Augsburg just wasn't good enough for, you know, their wage bill. And I think Di Matteo would have been sacked had he not quit the club.
Has this damaged him, do you think?
I think it has. You know, he was somebody that was always living off the Champions League success with Chelsea, but I've always maintained that, that was pure luck, basically. He did very little to get that team to win the Champions League. It was, you know, the players almost doing it for themselves. They relied on huge fortune to beat Barcelona in the semi-finals and then Bayern Munich in the final. And, you know, the season after, he really struggled at Chelsea and was quickly fired. And people felt he was unlucky there. I felt that was the right decision. He's walked into Schalke, nowhere near good enough. It'll be interesting to see what his next job is. I suspect it won't be his club as big as Schalke.
Yeah, because I remember when he left Chelsea, there were a lot of fans there who were disappointed that he didn't get a fair crack at the whip from their point of view. But this kind of proves those people wrong, and maybe the owners, specifically Abramovich, pretty right in getting rid of him as he did.
Yeah, I can understand the Chelsea fans, because obviously, you know, he still was the manager that won the Champions League, and he was a player of great distinction as well with Chelsea. So I can understand their emotional attachment to him, but I don't think they would have won the Premier League with Di Matteo, and he's very defensive tactics. I know they've been accused of being boring this season, but, you know, in Germany, most teams attack each other, and that's just the way it is. But he tried to bring, I wouldn't say it's a new style Italian football, because, you know, Italian football now, I think, is one of the most enjoyable leagues. But if you can kind of, it was kind of a little bit cliche Italian football, if you like. It was a very defensive, it wasn't a back three, it was a back five. The midfielders very rarely got up in support of Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, who barely scored a goal after the winter break. And, I think the Schalke fans are right to demand more entertainment from their team.
OK, you mentioned Italian football. I mean, there's a big finish in Serie A, not for the top, obviously, Juventus champions, but because of the race for the Champions League. Napoli trying to catch Lazio, and they meet this weekend.
Yeah, it's the final round of fixtures in Italy, and it's left an unbelievable situation. Napoli are 3 points behind Lazio, but it goes on head-to-head results. So if Napoli beat Lazio in the final round of games, they will go into the Champions League. Lazio were minutes away from qualifying on Monday, and then Roma scored. Yanga and Biwa, once of Newcastle, he scored very late on there to give Roma the victory. Of course, no love lost between Roma and Lazio, and the Roma players and fans celebrated wildly, because not only did it guarantee them second spot, it's also left Lazio in a dodgy position to qualify for the Champions League. Lazio have played some brilliant football this season, but they're just struggling to get over the line. They lost the Italian Cup final in extra time. They've just lost in heartbreaking circumstances to their local rivals, and now they've got to go again. They head to Naples to take on a Napoli team that's not playing well themselves. You just feel, though, with home advantage and being given this chance that they thought had gone, you would have to make Napoli slight favourites, I think, to get third spot now.
OK, well, let's go to Spain. And before we do, can I bring in Begoña Pérez? You're very welcome, Begoña.
Hello.
Great to have you with us again. The news came in to us last night while we were on air, actually, that Real Madrid had decided to sack Carlo Ancelotti. What do you make of this? Is it a surprise?
Well, it's not a surprise, because every single manager who hasn't won any trophy, important trophy, with under Florentino Perez, the chairman, has been sacked. It's not a surprise in that respect. It's surprising in football terms, in a way, because Ancelotti won the Champions League last season. It was La Decima, the desire, 10th European Cup. Things didn't go well on the pitch since January, dropping points, obviously getting knocked out by Juventus in the semi-final Champions League didn't help matters. Florentino Perez wasn't very explicit on the reasons behind this sack, but there were concerns about fitness, too many injuries, particularly Modric, who has been sorely missed on the pitch in the last part of the season. The probably inflexibility of Ancelotti on tactic terms, you know, very loyal to his 4-3-3 system, and probably that didn't help matters. And also the fact that the rotations were not many. I mean, he used about 12-13 players in the whole season. But as a whole, I mean, it's difficult to understand when someone got you such a big trophy last season. But on the other hand, this is a very demanding club, and that's what Florentino Perez said last night. And they need them to win trophies every single year. If you don't win a trophy, that's your destiny, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, it does seem like a pretty ruthless decision on one hand, but I suppose, as Begoña has just outlined there, that's the nature of this club. If you don't succeed and don't win those big trophies, that's it.
I suppose it doesn't help when Barcelona have already won the league and are in the cup final, the domestic cup final, and also the Champions League. Could be a treble for them, which just sort of makes the pain of Real Madrid going trophyless that much greater. Everybody's expecting, of course, Rafael Benitez to move in now. Just was going to ask that, but you know, Rafa is very much a 4-2-3 one man. I mean, where would that leave Bale, Ronaldo, Isco, and James Rodriguez?
Begoña?
Well, I think in what Rafa is capable of is about this tactical discipline, and that's what this Real Madrid side lacked. You know, the strikers or the attacking players didn't drop deep to defend. You know, there was a lack of solidarity in the team, in a way, and that's Rafa Benitez. You know, he's a very hardworking man, he works into detail. He's got a very strict methodology, and I think he's gonna be good in that respect. Obviously, the work ethic as well. He's gonna make them work hard to play as a team, as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, he does have this reputation as a tough taskmaster, Begoña, and I kind of wonder, you know, when someone like him comes in, does Cristiano Ronaldo respond to that? Does Gareth Bale, do the top players, Benzema, with the egos that they have and knowing how good they are, do they like to have that type of discipline, or will they react and revolt against it?
But he's got the experience to deal with egos. I mean, he's been in big European sides. He was at Chelsea in very adverse circumstances, and he made them work. They won a trophy, the Europa League, and they got a Champions League position, which was the target of the team. So he's a very experienced man. He knows the club where he's going to. He was a coach there in the youth system, and assistant also with Vicente del Bosque in a short time. And he knows that club is very demanding, and he's got his, you know, own circumstances, and the egos should be a problem as well. But overall, he knows how to do this job. He's got the CV and the pedigree to go to Real Madrid. He's got the profile. He's the right man for the job. But Real Madrid is a very different club from others he has been before. But in the end, he's going to try to make it work, and we hope he's going to make it work.
Mark, what's the perception of Rafa Benitez in Italy, and specifically Napoli at the moment? Will they be sad to see him go?
I don't think they will be sad to see him go. When he initially arrived at the club, it was a huge signing for them, and you know, he was expected to really challenge for the title. That's not been possible because of Juventus's just sheer brilliance, I suppose. But in this season, they were knocked out of the Champions League in the playoffs. They didn't even make the group stages, and then they were expected to win the Europa League. Given Rafa's pedigree in European competition, they fell short just about to Dnipro in the semi-finals. It looked like they were going to miss out on the top three, like we mentioned earlier there in Italy, but they've been given a lifeline there. But he has fallen out with Higuain. There was a bust-up at half-time away to Juventus last week, and I don't think that the power brokers at Napoli will be too sad to see him go. In fact, there was talk of them even sacking him this week. That's not going to happen now, but it's gone a little bit sour. But I mean, everybody knows that Rafa Benitez's CV is absolutely outstanding, but I think it's just been damaged slightly by what's happened in Naples this season particularly.
Begonia, can I ask? Sorry, yeah, come in.
Yeah, sorry, no, I thought clearly I agree with that. I mean, things at the Napoli is a very particular club, and the chairman, De Laurentiis, hasn't been helpful. When they were defeated by Lazio, and he locked the team literally in a hotel, that doesn't help matters. The team has been under a lot of pressure with the way the chairman has dealt the club.
What about the situation with Gareth Bale? Begonia, I'm not expecting an unequivocal answer here, but in terms of, do you think that that he will stay at Real Madrid for next season, or do you think there's a good possibility that he might want to leave?
Well, apparently his agent, Jonathan Barden, asked the club last week if they want them to go and if they want to sell the player. It's going to be difficult because for Florentino Perez, he was one of his Galacticos, one of his, you know, important signings. And in that respect, for Florentino Perez, would be an admission of, you know, this player didn't work. If he stays at Real Madrid and if he's coached by Rafa Benitez, he's going to be interesting to see how Rafa Benitez could shape the team, how he could make Gareth Bale work better, because he was criticised for not being very, you know, helpful on defensive duties. But, you know, that tactical discipline we mentioned before, that is something Rafa Benitez can bring to the team, and maybe it could help Gareth Bale to deliver.
Do you think, Mark, before we let this go, I mean, looking at Gareth Bale, his last few performances for Madrid, all things considered, have been very poor. I mean, he's not the same player he was last season. Do you think that's damaged his market value? And if you were an English club, would you think twice now about signing Gareth Bale?
No, I don't think it's damaged his value too much, purely because English teams are cash rich at the moment because of the latest TV deal, and his stock still in Britain is still remarkably high, and the opportunity to bring him back from Manchester United, possibly from Manchester City and also Chelsea, you know, could also be runners. No, I think that there'd be a long queue if Real Madrid wanted to get rid of him, and all of the best teams in England would gladly take him back. It has been a difficult second half to the season. I hope he stays, because I think under Rafa Benitez, that the framework could actually be better. And, you know, if the sort of team is working well collectively, then the individual usually shines brightest then. So I think maybe that's been a problem for Gareth Bale this season. So I hope he stays. If he does go, everybody in the Premier League would love to have him.
Okay, great stuff as always. Thank you so much to both of you, Mark Langdon and Begonia Perez. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bit of bad news. Unfortunately, James De Gale is not answering his phone. Nothing we can do about it. We have been on to his mother, who says she's going to do her very best for tomorrow night. That's all we can promise. But we do have the next best thing to James De Gale. Darren O'Neill.
Excuse me. Next best thing? look, James only back from Boston.
Listen, in fairness, she did say, look, he went to bed and she just can't wake him. And
listen, he's better sleeping in the bed than he is in the ring, isn't he?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Let's talk about the European Games coming up. It's the first one, so it's kind of tough to know what to expect in one sense, but in another sense, you've been to Azerbaijan before, and you know a lot of the guys that you're going to fight, even though you haven't fought them. Are you confident that you can go and give a good account of yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose as a team, we're quite confident. As I said earlier in the show, we've quite a young team going. I suppose Adam Nolan and myself are the two most experienced on the team. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be my first, I suppose, major outing at heavyweight. I've seen a lot of heavyweights before. Obviously, I haven't been looking at them or concentrating on them because I was two weights below that. But yeah. Look, I know what they're about. They're big, strong guys.
Your advantage must be your speed and your ability to move around the ring, though.
That's what I'm hoping. Anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in theory, like communism works.
Yeah. Look, I suppose once I turned over heavyweight at the start, I was trying to box like a heavyweight, and I realised that wasn't the way to go. Because, look, these guys are going to be a guts of a stone heavier than me, 2 or 3 or 4 inches or more taller. So in the last, I suppose, month or 6 weeks, I've been trying to get myself back boxing the way I suppose I box best, which is on my toes, feinting, moving and using my boxing skills.
Billy Walsh has always said that you have the power.
Yeah,
that's not a problem for you.
Yeah, well, I found out lately myself. You know, as I say, trying to stand and box like a heavyweight, kind of flat-footed and walking forward aggressively, I was getting a bit more strength and hitting strong, but not powerful. So I suppose we consider power to be the combination of speed and strength. You know, so mine naturally happens when I'm relaxed, and you know the shoulders drop and the arms just flow. So, you know, I think I've been trying to get it just back to instinct, and you know, things have been going well lately. So I'm looking forward to getting out there.
In terms of, I have to mention Dave Oliver Joyce this weekend because he has to fight.
Yeah, definitely.
He's got two fights left to qualify for Rio. He has to win both of them. It's a big fight this weekend against an Uzbek, is it?
Yeah, huge. Davey is actually in Uzbekistan now at the minute, in Tashkent, the capital there. And he's boxing a local Uzbekistani boxer. Davey's beaten him before in the three round traditional amateur ranks in Finland, I think, 2 years back. But yeah, look, it's going to be a very, very difficult fight because he's a home favourite now. I suppose he's boxing in his own back garden. And, you know, it is very, very important. So Davey has to win both fights. So there's a lot of pressure on him, you know. And while we feel a lot of pressure, I suppose, going to different competitions, you're there as a team and there's a group for you. So
he's on his own.
Yeah. Davey and Joe are going down a different route. And I suppose, you know, there's arguments for and against it. But it's definitely, you're there by yourself. And he's over. I think he left yesterday or last night, so he's after arriving there, he's starting training. You know, things are, I suppose, has to be playing in his mind now for the next few hours. Until Saturday.
If he does win this weekend, he goes to fight either the Russian or the Brazilian.
Yeah. So a tough fight. Davey lost to this Russian earlier in the competition, but in quite controversial circumstances.
And the Brazilian, he beat Lomachenko, but then it was overturned. Yeah. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, in Baku in the World Championships 2011. You know, it was
D. Lomachenko,
exactly. Jeez. Yeah,
must be good.
I was there watching the fight, you know. And at the time, we said, "Yeah, fair enough, he's been beaten," and we felt he had lost the fight. Now there was a bit of controversy in the fight. There was I think it was a public warning or something was awarded to the Brazilian, or against Lomachenko, I should say, which it awards the Brazilian 2 points, and I don't know, there was controversy around it, but if there was a technical fault at the time, which that was considered to be, so you should get two cautions, and then on third caution you get a warning. But apparently he didn't get enough cautions, and in turn they were able to overturn the decision, and Lomachenko went through and won the Olympic gold and world gold.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Katie Taylor going with you as well? Claire O'Grady?
Katie's going, yeah. We have Kira Smith,
sorry.
At 51 kilos. Then we have Michaela Walsh,
yeah.
And we have obviously the wonderful Katie.
Yeah, good stuff. You have a strong team and going through, even yourself and Adam there. Adam, I saw him at the National Championships. He was in brilliant form. What happened to him in the last tournament was just really unlucky. You can draw a line underneath that, but you lads will be hoping to give it socks over there.
Yeah, of course, definitely. And I have to say, a lot of young boys coming through are phenomenally talented. You know, we have a very strong team, I have to say. you know, and I think, you know, when I started on the senior team, I suppose it was back in 2006, only four of us went to the European Championships. You know, that's all they consider enough to go. And, you know, now we've nearly two or three teams strong enough to go to any championship. And, you know, I'd be pretty confident the boys will do well.
The Irish Army are coming. You'll come back into us and let us know how you get on. We'll be keeping definitely. You posted. Obviously, we'll let everyone know. Best luck with everything.
Yeah, thanks.
Just knock them out. Knock them out. Okay, stay tuned. Louise is on the way after the news.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.